Hi there, everybody. Welcome to The Principal Entrepreneur. I'm your host and author of the book, How to Be a Great Principal, Jonathan Royce. This is episode 96 of The Principal Entrepreneur, where we support educational leaders with strategies and suggestions that answer the question, how do I become a great principal? I also interview principals and school and educational leaders just like me and you and discuss their areas of expertise and how they overcome the challenges within schools. Today we're talking with Dr. Mary Hughes Tutis. Dr. Tutis has been in the educational arena for a couple of decades, 35 years to be exact. She is a lecturer and expert in neuro-linguistics for educators and is the founder of Teacher TMI, 10 Minutes of Information, where they specialize in bringing 10 minutes of information that matches the school calendar when and where teachers need it. We'll chat with her about the creation and inspiration for her company in just a bit, but before we do, let's get into her origin story. Dr. Tutis, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show here. And before we talk about the inspiration behind your company there, tell us about how you found your way into education.
I don't know that I found my way into education, except that I've always lived it. Growing up, it was always part of the neighborhood thing. If you know something, it was your obligation to share with the others. We were a baby boomer neighborhood, so people of all ages, and you kind of have to pass it on or you got nobody to play with. That was kind of the beginning. School caught on to that, and cooperative learning was so pressing in the 70s. So very often I was called to duty to be a group leader or a tutor in the group and such things. And that kind of grew on and on and on. High school, they had a special PE program, and it was for leadership. And so we were in a PE class learning to do exercises backwards and how to run small groups, et cetera, et cetera. Certainly that added to the sense that, oh, yeah, I could do this formally and professionally. And from there, I went working for the YMCA, daycare, day camps during the summer. And you really have to manage children energy during that time.
Right.
From there, it was an easy step into teaching PE in a school stream.
So you started out as a physical education teacher?
That was my first actual teaching position. It was combined, actually, and oddly, it was a private school, a Catholic school. And twice a week, we had values clarification classes with the junior high students. So it was social science, but values clarification. And my other half was PE, yes.
So you were in as a PE teacher. What led you to the leadership piece?
Well, that was kind of it. I'm from the neighborhood that I was teaching in, and they just assumed I would take over one of the leaderships for the groups in the values clarification. And then on a technical easy piece, my sister-in-law was vacating a PE teaching piece, and it was easier for her to leave if she could find her replacement. And
right.
That's when I was just returning from college.
Okay.
So it was a perfect timing moment.
If I see this correctly, you went from the PE to the principalship, is that correct?
Not directly, no. I took several years before going into principal position. I waited until I had taught almost every grade level.
Ah.
I waited another 15 years, yeah.
So what inspired you or led you to choose to be a principal?
Well, that was a little bit more on a political end of things. We had a teacher drop for quite a number of years in our area during the late 80s and early 90s. By then, I was teaching at Cal State University East Bay in the teacher credential department. Leadership was waning, I felt, in our district, and I felt instead of complaining about it, I should learn about it and step into the role.
Okay.
So I would have better empathy and understanding of what I was living with. And it took me from there.
So did you think about becoming a principal right away, or did you go in there at first just to see, just so you could get a different lens at what you were doing, or did you go in there with the intentionality of saying, I can do this better than what I'm seeing?
It was a little of both. I find that I have a following just about everywhere I go. So leadership is kind of unavoidable for me sometimes, but I figured I ought to be properly trained rather than just step in with no knowledge, no empathy, no experience. And so, you know, it was a gradual transfer over to, wait a second, okay, as people are retiring faster and faster, I've got to be ready to lead, so I want to be ready. And so I took smaller leadership roles first, and I took new teacher development as one of them. I was a leader in English language development, and I was also a leader in English language arts across the board.
Right.
So, you know, stepping stones, always stepping stones.
Right. You said something that was interesting. You said that you felt like it was unavoidable for you to fall into or step into a leadership role. Are there traits that you find in yourself that kind of lend itself to that, and then you just had to enhance that, or was that something that you've always been interested in and worked on?
Well, I think part of it's very natural, and part of it is practical skills that you have to learn. But I think by nature, I'm very inclusive and I'm positive-oriented, so people find it easy to work with me as a team member and support my ambitions because they're pretty education-oriented and they don't sound political. And the other parts are the administrative tasks, the running the budget and making rules, regulations, and policies. Those make sense to me, but from my training more than from a natural stance.
Right.
So the combination, I think, is pretty effective. I think people talking around me about me would say pretty much the same thing.
Right. When you, as a principal, what was the most challenging experience that you had in that capacity?
Always being public, always in the public eye, scrutinized for everything you say, everything you do. I focus a lot on exactly what I'm going to say, exactly what I'm going to do. I worked in a highly profiled charter school in Oakland under the leadership of now Governor Jerry Brown. At the time, he was the mayor in Oakland. And he was starting a new charter, a plan of how to get organization, tradition, uniformity into the public school system without bringing in God. You know, kind of like the Catholic school system, but how do you make it public and
right.
you can't use God?
Right.
And so what he did was he partnered with the military and started Oakland Military Institute. But because he was a high figure and because we were in a hot spot, Oakland, we were always scrutinized and the cameras always on us. So that was very difficult. But that was situational. Situational.
Right. So how did you work your way through that challenge?
Well, the inner challenge, of course, that made it a public hardship was always knowing I had to be true to myself and still represent education. And then, of course, keep the public eye appropriately focused. So I worked through that because partly who I am is forever reflecting on my practices and making sure I'm in alignment with who I want to be and where I'm going and what. Why am I in this role in the first place?
Right.
And that's a daily, it's an hour-to-hour thing sometimes, especially those busy moments.
So it,
being scrutinized constantly is tough.
Right. So you spent and you found time, even in quiet moments, just finding time to reflect on why you were in the job and what your values were and making sure that your public commentary aligned with that. Is that
absolutely.
What I heard?
Absolutely.
And that's, just from my own experience, that is not easy to do, especially when you're running around trying to put out fires.
The second hardship of being a principal, there is no planned day. You can go ahead and plan, and you should plan, but don't expect it to be planned.
Right.
The choreography changes constantly. So do the players.
I see that you have studied neurolinguistics for educators. How does that play into leadership, and how does that manifest itself?
Oh, it is. it is exactly what we're already talking about. It is starting right from where you are and moving it forward. The words of positivity, the deeds of positivity are actions and words all moving you forward toward that goal. For example, it's difficult for children or human beings at large to negate pictures in their mind. So you want to create pictures and images in their minds that take them closer to the goal. Example, don't run in the street. Immediately the mind conjures somebody going into the street running.
Right, right.
But stay on the sidewalk is a projection preferred.
Ah.
It saves all that energy of reversal, which human minds are not always mature enough or capable of negating what they've already thought, but it puts them in that proactive step forward. I always call it 0+1 or I+1, starting with the individual and taking one step forward.
So what does that look like in terms of working with a staff member that may be difficult or may not agree with your philosophical position? How would you frame?
Definitely starting with common goals, school goals, required goals, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of those are already in print and structured. And then it's a matter of, okay, you're here, I'm here, we're in the same canoe, we're going to paddle in the same direction. So what are you going to contribute? And sometimes just asking questions. Very often people will say, why are you doing that with kids? Or why are you not doing that? And the why is in itself an accusation. And I like to shift it over to for what reason. When you say for what reason, you're making an assumption that there is rationale and thinking behind what they're doing and saying. And once you get to that, you can start directing and redirecting the energy of the teacher, energy of the student, and you can redirect anybody. It works for significant others as well.
So,
but you got to focus on what to do instead of what not to do.
Right.
It all lines up the same.
Right. I think that the power of language is fascinating, especially I come from an English teacher background. So just the power of words without even realizing it, right?
Words are important. They are so important.
So you have all these different experiences and areas of expertise. Talking about your business now, how did that kind of culminate into Teacher TMI, and where did the genesis of that come from?
Well, where everything else comes from. It comes from a sense of urgency and necessity. There were a few years back, I was working in teachers' blog. I've been working in teacher development all along, but specifically my role for a while when I returned to Richmond was teacher support, except it was to remediate the veterans who had been accused of poor performance or sought out for improvement. And it was also the influx of all of our new teachers. But I was one person serving 2,400 teachers.
Right.
And I was going school to school to school. We have 40 schools across a 20-mile radius. So I was busy and I thought, you know, my commute time is being lost. I should be able to use that. So I started doing the 10 minutes of information. I took my seminars and my lectures from the university and broke them down into smaller segments and sent them as emails to all of our local district teachers.
Right.
The district at the time didn't have supervision for me per se, and so I was on my own to do that. So I did do those all on my own time, and had permission to blast them to the 2,400 teachers.
Right.
Out of those 2,400 teachers, several hundred are still with me, even though we've lost half. We're down now in our district to 1,400 teachers. And out of the 1,400, I don't have an exact number, but close to 1,800 are not credentialed right now. And so we have a lot of teachers new, some flailing, some suffering and not sure anymore that this is the profession for them because there's not enough mentoring to go around.
Right.
And so this was a shortcut way. It's 10 minutes. I've lived the school calendar for 35 years, plus I lived it growing up, so I can kind of anticipate when conferences are coming, when the holidays are coming, et cetera, and the issues of controversy that go through your head during that calendar year. And that's what the 10 minutes of information is that is sent to teachers on a regular basis. And it is 10 minutes of information that some urgently need, and it is just TMI for some of the veterans who have heard it a million times.
Right.
Perfectly okay.
Right.
Perfectly okay to be interpreted either way.
Right. As you were putting these modules together, or as people respond, what are a few of the most popular modules that teachers are appreciative of?
Oh, so much about the positivity and moving forward, so that they don't have to take it personally. Kids acting out in the class are not always a personal insult to you as a new teacher or as a new teacher. If you can look just one step further, you can unhook the shame and blame that you feel all the time, angst that you live, and you can move on knowing that you are providing service still. And sometimes kids just don't know how to appreciate it. And sometimes when kids name call, it's actually their appreciation to you for keeping them on track,
right,
because other people are not.
Right.
So that's one stance where new teachers are very appreciated, very much appreciating some of these. But also it's very simple checklists that go out of what to do to get ready for your classroom. The physical things, where to put the desks, where to put the papers and books. And then back to school night, what to say to parents, how to prepare your syllabus. Then there's back to school night, how to go through the procedure and still be respectful and professional, but get out on time so you can come to school the next day. Just different strategies every inch of the way. And then the problem solving or the troubleshooting, what to do with this specific type of unwanted behavior and how to go about squelching it, again, using positivity and redirection. We don't push punitive measures as much as we push redirection and the positivity. Build with what you do have.
Right. Is there, or have you gotten any feedback from the principals of those buildings that the teachers are getting this just because they're so thankful that there's something that's coming out?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and all the time. Very often it's the principals who are referring these teachers now to join up with Teacher TMI. And it's, okay, locally it's easier. In the Bay Area, it's easier. I have firsthand access, and they can come to our regular meetups. We meet once a month on a Tuesday at the local pizza parlor or something, and we troubleshoot what people bring in, but then we also have a planned seasonal topic. Principals very often join and then take it back to their faculties as their professional development on site.
Right.
Local leaders and mentors do the same thing.
Yeah, I know. I got a couple brand new teachers coming in over the last couple years. I think this link will for sure be added to the repertoire of material for them.
Sure, and don't overlook the TMIs that are for leaders. How to get your teachers to believe that they actually are teachers and that they are good teachers, and words that you can use to encourage them wanting to stay with you and to perform well for you.
Ah, I must have missed that.
There aren't as many of the leadership ones because the need was first the urgency of the teacher. But again, our district is so full of administrators who were not in the classroom 5 years, or a minimum, you know, fewer than 10 for sure. And leadership needs these as well.
And that's kind of where I am. I'm just now entering my second year, and I'm just getting to the point where I'm thinking that I can actually think ahead and try to plan ahead, whereas before I was just trying to keep up. So I appreciate that for sure.
Yeah, first you have to walk the calendar, and then you can start sensing it and anticipating
it. Right.
Your first year, you kind of like respond to it rather than control it forward.
That's exactly right.
So that's the same as it is for teachers.
Yep. So.
And so here's my easiest, simplest, straight up advice for you. Ask any teacher, or what is it? List what you would like a teacher to do and say that would show their support for any individual student in their room. And you're going to come up with a list like respect them for who they are, include their talents and skills, give them a chance to grow, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to have this very positive list of how you want teachers to treat students, correct?
Correct.
And that same list is posted on your desk, because that's how you need to treat the teachers.
You You did a good job
assume they have something good to contribute. Assume they have skills. Watch out for the things they don't have skills for and scaffold them or provide the training for it. No one comes into this profession wanting to do poorly. No one. And they end up doing poorly when training is not contemporary or up-to-date or replenished or accessible or timely. And that's how our veterans get weary and dry up by the wayside and lose their enthusiasm.
Right.
We don't do enough of keeping them paddling and honoring them. We just kind of ride on them for a while, and then they fatigue. And as you know, teachers love to give all the way until they feel taken.
Right. Yep. That's the finding that balance of giving them the power to make the choices and be part of, you know, the whole collaborative piece, but also not put so much on them where, like you said, they feel like they're being taken advantage of.
Exactly. They don't want to feel like they're doing your job for you. They want to contribute to your decision-making and such. So I always caution people when they say, okay, give teachers power. It's like, well, I'd rather you just give them an opportunity. Because power is a responsibility.
Right.
Opportunity is just that, opportunity. And then, of course, always listen to the ones who are quiet. The louder ones you'll hear repeatedly.
Yes, yes.
And again, that's the same in the classroom as it is for a faculty.
I tend to be on the introverted side of the scale, so I'd always make sure to, whether in writing or on the side, to pull the quiet ones over and ask them how they're doing or you know, what their thoughts
yes.
are.
Yeah, inclusion is critical at all levels.
So if you were just going to give one piece of advice to a new principal, in one sentence, what would that be? What would that nugget be?
To a new principal? Just like I said, treat your teachers as you would have them treat the students.
As we finish up here, what two books have had an impact on your professional philosophy?
Philosophy. Easy. Those are pretty easy. In the early parts of my career, and it still carries me now, is a very simple read. It's John Wooden's They Call Me Coach.
Nice.
I love that one. Be the best you can be under whatever given circumstances, and he gives you the building blocks and stages to do it. And I love the book because you can have students read that, you can have teachers read, and it's easy read. You only have to read one chapter to get the feel of it. And if he did not live out positivity and forward motion and natural NLP practices, I don't know who did.
Yeah.
So I love that book as a guidance. It takes what we would these days call the most ruffian players and turns them into high-caliber performers.
High-caliber people.
You name it.
Yep.
Yeah. Another one, which is definitely more philosophic, is the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And he's all about being impeccable with your word, let your actions speak what you really intend to make as part of your own character. He tells you to not take things to be personal, not to make assumptions, and to always strive for your best.
What was the name of that again?
The Four Agreements.
The Four Agreements. Thank you.
Correct. And those agreements are agreements, he says, we make with society at large simply because we live in society. Like, we didn't really choose our own languages. We just had to accept it. We agreed that this is a language, and book means book. And we have to agree to certain things in the world, but you don't have to agree to what does not match with your personal character. But you got to be aware of it because you can fall into the patterns of others.
Right, right. That's that language piece again that you were talking about earlier.
It is. And he's the first one to say, yeah, language is so very important. Language, the words you choose is incredible. I'm kind of sad in our schools that, you know, we're getting more broad-minded about acceptance and raising the umbrella to accept communication standards and such. But actual denotative language is still very highly critical. And if it's teal, I want it to be called teal. I don't want you to say green.
Right.
It is a different monster.
Yes.
So, yes, words. Don Miguel will tell you that, and John Wooden will say it matters too. Those are my big reads. Those are my big reads, and they're easy reads.
Yep.
I listen to Don Miguel on tape, coming and going from hard situations. I find it to be my therapy. It's not about me. It's not about me. It's not about me.
Yep, yep. So
that way I can stay in my role.
As we finish up here, where can educators find out more about Teacher TMI, and where can they contact you?
Those are both easy. TeacherTMI.com is our website. It has a lot of free load downs, and it goes from audios, and it's got video on YouTube, and it's got some handouts, especially now for back-to-school time. There's a lot of stuff being up and down all week long, and it's August now, so this week a lot's going to be loaded. If they want a direct email, it's TeacherTMI@USA.com, but that's also accessible by the website.
Right.
And you can contact Mary. You can make suggestions for further topics. You can download certain things and readjust them to your need, your local need, and your local culture. So, yeah, TeacherTMI.com. It's growing rather than shrinking. We are talking about getting a 10-minute spot on local TV programs because we're so urgent in California with new teachers.
Right. Well, all over the place. You're either...
That's everywhere, but this is... You know, take care of your own first and spread
right,
from there.
Right. The number of turnover that I've had just in my first year here, and then our district as a whole over the last, you know, 3-4 years, and then the lack of teachers coming in, there's a real crunch coming in terms of finding people who are willing to educate kids.
Yes, we have to, and again, we have to make the profession valuable and seen as valuable. I mean, I'm not rich and I'm not wealthy, but the other thing is, eventually TMI will convert to at least paying its own bills. But until then, I am rich in spirit more than rich in the bank.
And that's kind of where I'm at with the idea of this podcast is, you know, how can I spread the positivity and the good things that educators are doing around the country, and then not just, well, selfishly for me, because this is a great conversation for me to have and for me to learn, but
mm-hmm.
then to be able to exponentially spread that out is a great feeling. Also selfish, because I feel great doing
it. Exponential is the whole world. And, you know, the story of the 100th monkey.
I don't know that story.
It's a good one. It's a persuader. It just, the concept, and this is a true scientific research they've done, but here's the concept that follows us now. It takes not 98 and 99 monkeys doing the same thing for the universe to accept it as true. We need that 100th monkey to cross the center of the fulcrum and get the teeter-totter going until it's universal. They say jump rope songs on the East Coast and West Coast start up here, start up there, and pretty soon the 100th monkey knows it, and the whole world knows the same song.
Right, right.
And so our concept of positivity, we need a 100th monkey. We're halfway there, I'd say. We started with positivity and self-esteem, and now we have to comb it out and make sure we do that properly and not pretend to do it. We're now in an era of mindfulness, and some of that is really, it's all very excellent stuff, but we need to practice it authentically. And then we can approach the 100th monkey where everybody's practicing.
Right. Well, that, and then it needs to be valued by everyone, and everybody needs to see.
Yeah, they got to own it.
Right, right.
Well, and they got to live it.
Well,
you can't pretend. You can't just go through the motions.
No, because the kids will see that, that's for sure.
Too easily. Those are those cold pricklies out of the fuzzy land thing. Yeah.
Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me. I'm glad we were finally able to communicate.
Yes. Jonathan, thank you for doing this. I think it's so very important for, like you said, the world to know that there are good things happening in education so we can welcome other good people into it to get more done.
Once again, that was Dr. Mary Hughes Tudis. One of the highlights for the show for me included the idea that as the baby boomers leave the profession, we better be ready to step up and lead. A couple of her more tweetable quotes were, "Students acting out in class are not always a personal insult to you." And also, "Teachers love to give and give all the way until they feel taken." She also had some outstanding wisdom to share, like, "You can go ahead and plan, you should plan, but don't expect the day to be planned." Just one of the pieces of advice she had for principals was that you want to treat your teachers as you would have them treat their students. Once again, the books that she recommended were They Call Me Coach by John Wooden and The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. For a complete summary of this conversation and all the links, please check out the corresponding blog at howtobeagreatprincipal.com. Interview with Dr. Mary Hughes Tudis. If you found this entertaining, educational, or cause for reflection, please share it with your friends. And if you'd like to do me a solid, please follow me on Podomatic and leave a comment and review. This helps other educators find the show as well and helps spread our positive message. If you'd like the top stories of the month without having to search through Facebook or hope you catch it in your feed, you can subscribe to the Principal Prep Minute, which is a short email with the 5 most popular blogs and podcasts as selected by readers and listeners. And that is on the welcome page of the website on the right-hand side, right past the fold as you scroll down. For more short articles and tips that support education leaders, you can check out the other blogs on that page as well, howtobeagreatprincipal.com. And you can also order my newest book, How to Be a Great Principal, 36 Shared Leadership Success Strategies. If you're an auditory learner, you are in the exact right spot. And you can download other episodes of The Principal Entrepreneur on podcast and on iTunes and Podomatic. We got new episodes that come out weekly, usually Tuesday and Thursday. And then if I'm lucky enough to get a hold of somebody like Dr. Mary, those come out on Saturdays. If you're interested in sharing your own experience as an ed leader, please email me at jonathanroyce@theprincipalentrepreneur.com. I'd love to chat with you and learn more about what you're doing. Finally, I'm part of a community of supportive principals. Please join our private Facebook group. Go to Facebook, type in Principal Entrepreneur, and our private Facebook group will pop up. All you have to do is answer the question whether or not you're an educational leader. Appreciate you taking the time to spend part of your day with me. And that is it for this episode of The Principal Entrepreneur.